Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. We'll be reading today World Radio Magazine in digest form for the month of June 2008 here on the Carriage Handy Ham system. World Radio is published by Armand Noble. Armand's call is N6WR. The editor is Nancy Kott, K-O-T-T. Her call is W-Z-8-C. They're located in Sacramento, California. This recording is a production of the Carriage Handy Ham system, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handy Ham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@carriage.org. Our website is www.handyham.org. We'll begin today with Nancy Kott's editor's letter. June not only brings the warmer weather, but it also brings hams out of their shacks and into the sunshine. Field Day, 28 through 29 June 2008. Field Day is arguably our most important amateur radio activity. It has the potential to have something for everyone. It is a long enough period to give most people an opportunity to participate, displays our viability as emergency communicators to the general public. It can be a contest or a learning experience and allows us to spend time among our own kind. The downside of Field Day is that it is only as much fun as the participants. Worst case scenario, your club doesn't want to do Field Day, or you don't feel welcome as a newcomer. This is where individuals like you need to step up and take some responsibility. Have your own Field Day. There isn't any law that says just because the club doesn't want to do Field Day, you can't have your own. Odds are there are enough local hams who feel the same way you do. Find a spot outdoors, throw up a dipole into some tree, and get to work. There are even accommodations in the Field Day rules for operating from your home station. Admittedly, that is not the first choice, but it is better than nothing. We hear unhappy stories about I'm the only HF operator in the club. If your club only has a handful of HF operators, use Field Day as a training experience. Your Field Day contact totals will not win any prizes, but you can give some non-HFers a chance to make their first contacts. Another story we hear is they only want to sit around drinking 1807s, let's beer, and eating barbecue. So what? That is their idea of a good Field Day. Those guys who are just sitting around and shoot the breeze are probably catching up with friends they only see once a month at meetings or once a year at Field Day. Grab a soda pop and join them for a little while. You may hear some interesting stories of operating other modes that will inspire you. Most established clubs have old-timers who cannot make it to meetings anymore and who have had to put their gear into mothballs. Consider doing a good deed and give them a personal invitation and maybe transportation to your Field Day. A club roster from a few years ago can provide you with their names. You can bet that they still have nostalgic feelings about Field Day, even though they are not on the air. It would make their day to get a phone call inviting them to the club's Field Day and perhaps getting an opportunity to operate again. Because it brings us together with our common goal of celebrating amateur radio, Field Day has a way of making friends out of strangers. As the saying goes, make new friends, but keep the old. Old is silver, the other gold. The old-timers are a gold mine of knowledge, and there isn't a better way of keeping the continuity and history in amateur radio than kibitzing around a picnic table or logging for someone while they are making Field Day contacts on a radio. Do your part to keep passing it forward. A fun, attention-free operating event you may want to consider joining in next month is the Fists CW Club Summer Sprint. Everyone is welcome, and it is just 4 hours long. If you do not have a Fists number, just use your power out instead of Fists number in the exchange. Sprints are traditionally held on the second Saturday of the month, but because of IARU-HF contests, the date of the summer sprint has been moved to the second Friday in July. That's July 11th, from 2000 EDT, Eastern Daylight Time, to 2400 Eastern Daylight Time. Now, for your listeners, if you'd like to get in touch with Nancy Gott, her email is nancy@tir.com, or you can mail her directly at Nancy, call WZ8C, P.O. Box 807, Hadley, H-A-D-L-E-Y, Michigan, M-I, 48440. Let's now take a peek at the Newsfront information from World Radio Newsfront, amateur radio news courtesy of the ARRL letter and Newsline. Washington State invites hams to join Amber Alert System. According to a news report aired on the Spokane television station KHQ, there are some 27,000 licensed amateur radio operators in Washington State that the state's emergency management system and state patrol have jointly invited to take part in the Amber Alert program. Representing the local Spokane ham community on the KHQ newscast was Jack Tilley, call AD7FO. Tilley is the Spokane County Heiress and Racist Assistant Emergency Coordinator. He said that the advantage ham radio has is that it has people on the roads with two-way radios in their vehicles. If they are aware of an Amber Alert and spot a fugitive's car with a kidnapped victim, they can quickly call in the information to authorities. He also noted that hams have communications into areas of Spokane where cell phones do not work. Washington State Trooper Jeff 70 appeared by telephone on the KHQ report. He said that the addition of the ham radio community to the program is truly welcome. He said that the main goal is to find children who are missing as quickly as possible and that the more people out there helping, the better. No mention was made as to whether any of the state's ham radio repeaters plan to install decoders to permit direct relay of Amber Alert messages. Some hams in other states do not think doing so is legal. Others do, but nobody has ever petitioned the FCC to get a definitive ruling. That interesting piece was filed by our Newsline. Hams respond to Georgia tornadoes. Ham radio was on the scene when tornadoes swept through Georgia on 14 March 2008. At 9:38 p.m. Eastern Time, an F2 tornado touched down in downtown Atlanta. The National Weather Service said the twister was 6 miles long and 200 yards wide. An F2 tornado has wind speeds from 111 to 135 miles per hour and the ability to tear roofs off houses, completely destroy mobile homes, and snap apart trees as if they were toothpicks. As seen in TV coverage, the damage was extensive. Eyewitness accounts said that huge hunks of metal and broken glass were everywhere in Atlanta and that the Olympic Centennial Park was a mess. The high winds caused major damage to several other landmarks, including the Georgia World Congress Center. Grady Memorial Hospital, the major trauma center for the Atlanta metro area, had a 100-foot-tall communications tower blown off the hospital roof, disabling communications with emergency medical personnel. According to the ARRL letter, soon after the twister hit, hams sprung into action. William Chandler, called KG4JTK, went from house to house in the wind and rain checking for any injuries in the homes that had sustained damage by falling trees and debris. At the same time, he issued reports via radio to Barry Kahn, W4TGA, the emergency coordinator for neighboring DeKalb County, regarding fallen trees, billboards, power lines, and other threats to public safety. Kahn relayed this information to the Atlanta 911 Center and the Grady Hospital Emergency Operations Center. In Effingham County, near Savannah, on Georgia's coastline, a tornado took down 6 power towers during the annual St. Patrick's Day celebrations and plunged the community into total black conditions. local to me to Skywarn.net with Greg Tillman and for VAD serving as net control, provided a vital link for the staff at Memorial University Medical Center in Savannah. There were words of praise for the volunteer work performed by Georgia's amateur radio community. Dr. Ray McGuire, N4RVM, a physician and senior hospital administrator, sent a letter of appreciation. He thanked the local hams for staying with them through the weather and the power outages. That was a compilation from various sources, including the ARRL. U.S. ham population. Here's some moderately good news regarding growth in numbers of FCC-licensed amateur radio operators. In its latest posting of license statistics to QRZ.com, George McClaw, K3UD, says it looks as if overall amateur radio service numbers have increased by 912 from January through March 2008. According to George, the technician and the technician plus category had large increases, while general had small increases. As expected, novice and advanced decline. According to George, it appears that the technician license is still the most popular entry into the hobby for newcomers, making good gains over the last two quarters. Also, the movement to upgrade to extra class is continuing. On the downside, it appears the large movement from hams upgrading to general after the last round of restructuring has slowed to a trickle over the last 6 months. We can thank AR Newsline for that tidbit. Ham radio to the rescue. KSL Television reported on 28 March 2008 that a driver passing through Utah's remote Logan Canyon lost control of her truck in the snow. The vehicle fell more than 100 feet over a cliff. Two of her three passengers were thrown out. Other drivers stopped to help, but with no cell phone coverage in the isolated area, it was at least a 30-minute drive to make a phone call. But Eldon Carroll, K70GM of Fish Haven, Idaho, had a communication system that could call for assistance out of the remote canyon area. Using his portable ham gear, Carroll contacted Roger Ellis, KE7THE of Logan, Utah. Ellis, who says he's still new to amateur radio, was able to relay information to the 911 emergency response dispatchers. A half hour later, help was on the scene. Late word is that everyone survived the crash with only minor injuries. The Utah Highway Patrol says if not for Curl and Ellis getting help to the scene so quickly, those injuries could have become a lot worse. Thanks again, AR Newsline. Folks, on the cover of this June 2008 World Radio Magazine edition, the theme apparently is to be antennas and towers for the golden years. So I'll begin our first featured piece called Antennas and Towers for the Golden Years. Author is Cal White. Call WF5W, Whiskey Fox 5 Whiskey. I am a 70-year-old DXer and an old climber. Been hamming for 50 years. Have had dipoles, quads, delta loops, long wires, small towers, large towers, a three-tower antenna farm, and a variety of large, long, complicated wiring groups for the low band. The key word is had, H-A-D. I recently moved to another home, sold the towers, lowered the wires, and started planning low maintenance, easy to work on antennas and towers. I want to keep my towers and antennas up and running well into the time I am using a walker and not even remembering that I could climb a tower, let alone work on the antenna at the top. The reason for this article is that a lot of us fit into my description. I am sure all of us want to continue hamming. How to do that? Many of my contemporaries have stuff in the air that doesn't work now, can't find any climbers, and are sitting in their shacks more than a bit frustrated. I've looked at all the vertical antennas available, and finally figured out that they are all basically the same. What is a quarter wave up and has one quarter wave radios at the base? Answer, every true vertical that is made. So what to do? Make one? Buy one? Which one? My choices came down to two, the step STEPPIR, that's STEPP, uppercase IR, 40 meters to 10 meters, or the high gain high tower with the same coverage plus 80 meters. The STEPPIR Big IR is an awesome antenna. It is versatile, has a small footprint, and is easily handled by one person. However, I chose the high tower because I have wanted one for 40 years, and secondly, the design has withstood the test of time. Plus, it is a hose on 40, and this word spelled H-O-S-E. Easy to tune on all bands with no computer or moving parts. Both the STEPPIR and the high tower require at least 30 radios to be effective. The STEPPIR only requires a 2-inch pipe in the ground, but the high tower requires a 3-foot by 3-foot pad of concrete. Small price to pay for such a pretty antenna. Using my old DR trimmer with the trimmer attachment, bend the blade to make a wider swath, I dug trenches outward from the high tower for the radials, 66-footers, 33-footers, and some 10-footers, and buried the Berryflex coax back to the shack. The high tower folds over in the event you ever need to straighten anything, add anything, or just want to inspect it, just loosen two bolts and lay it down all by yourself. It's not easy. I put it on the air and am very satisfied with the performance. With no moving parts and a substantial ground, it will hold up for many years of maintenance-free performance. So that completed my search for a vertical. Job one done. Now, what to do about the lack of a long boom multi-element monobander for 20, 15, and 10, 30, 17, and 12 meters? A fact of life is that if you have stuff in the air, it will break, and you will have to work on it. And you won't be able to climb the tower to work on the ring rotators or the elements. You all know what I mean. The passage of time on the muscles, joints, and hands takes its toll, not to mention the energy levels. I had to work around these facts. Turns out it's easy. A call to U.S. Tower Company in Lincoln, Kansas, brought their manufacturing supervisor on the line. We talked about what was available and what it would require. Now, the ideal tower. 72-foot motorized crank-up with a 5-foot mast, coax ring holders, fold-over base, and a tower-rising structure with crank-up winch. The whole package costs less than $6,000, and a trip to Kansas with your pickup truck and trailer to get it. Even that is fun if you share it with a fellow ham. Why go with the electric crank-up? First of all, it is electric. No matter what your age, you should be able to push the switch and watch it go up 23 feet nested to 72 feet soaring. Even if you're 90, you should be able to push the button, nest the tower, and then unlock the 9 bolts from the base, tilt it over to work on the rotator, mast, antenna, coax, all on the ground level. That is the real goal, to work on it at the ground level. Just remember, if you were on the tower when you were younger, suddenly lost your balance or footing, you would break something, that's for sure. At our age, that is a life-changing event. We just don't have to take that chance with this type tower. I know, now you're thinking this is just an old man talking. Well, put your ego aside and think about the reality of life. We're here for a short time. We all want that to be a quality time. What better way to make sure we don't shortchange that time by taking away some of the obvious risks associated with our towers and antennas? You will have to make a cage out of a rebar and dig a big hole to bury it, 5 feet by 5 feet by 6 feet deep, holding about 6.5 yards of concrete. You can start the dig, but I would recommend you hire a young guy to finish it. Yeah, that's for sure. That done, and the wiring out to the tower. Mine is at the back of the barn, so all wiring just runs from my shack in the barn back to the tower. You are almost ready to do some more thinking. The antenna, slant, antennas. Now, the author continues with the subtitle, The Antenna for the Rest of Your Life. It's fun to brag about my antenna farm, the long boom mind benders, etc., but if you listen around in this particular time, you will start to hear some other bragging stuff about how one antenna does it all. One coax easily replaced elements, lightweight, and the monobander on all the ham bands, all on one boom. No, I am not a salesman for the Step IR company, but I have had a lot of experience with them. I had one on YAP in a typhoon that withstood it all. A storm twisted the rebar at the base of the pipe tower, but did not even bother the antenna. We have used them on several D expeditions with outstanding service. Look around on the web and you will see that many others have also used them on D expeditions. Why? Because they work on all bands. They are easy to put up and they last. I will say this, you may not be the first one to get the rare DX, but you will be there right after the big guns get them. It's just a matter of hours, not weeks. So, what has been decided, several of us old guys have already figured this out. The three-element step IR with the 30-slant 40-element trombone gives you 40-slant 10 meters and everywhere in between. If you're a 6-meter buff, you can add that too. You end up with a dipole on 30 and 40, and a 3-element monobander on all the other bands, all with one coax and one beam, and this antenna really does the job. Regarding maintenance, you nest the tower, tip it over, work on the antenna on the ground. One of the reasons we picked the 3-element was for the 16-foot boom that puts the center 8 feet from the ground when you tilt it over. Using a small stepladder, you can easily do any work you need at a safe height. Let's say you get unsteady and fall off the 4-foot ladder, which would not be a life-threatening event, more than likely. If that happens on the whole tower up at the top, that might be funeral time. This guy's got a sense of humor, folks, huh? Conclusions. It's tough to grow old. Boy, he's got that right. It's tough to admit that you no longer should be climbing towers. It's tough to wake up in the morning and find that some of your joints hurt. He must be talking about me. It's tough to think about how old your coax is, how old the tower guy wires are, and how brittle they may be. It's tough to think that the wind has bent your elements on that high beam 2 or 3 years ago and it is still up there, twisted. That all goes away when you look in the mirror and say to yourself, I am good for my age. I am going to make my hamming life safe, easy, and lasting. I will enjoy this lifelong hobby till the last breath goes. See you on the air. Well, not only was that an interesting article from my perspective, folks, but the author, Cal White, Cal's call is WF5W, Whiskey Foxtrot 5 Whiskey. Cal made it easy to read and very funny in quite a few spots there. It makes me want to reminisce about my very own amateur radio experience here in Dartmouth, Massachusetts. I've been a ham for about 30 years now, and when I started, as he is saying, and most of us probably do think in the same way, I wanted a big one, a tall one, and could I afford it? Well, I was working, making a little bit of money in those days. So I looked around my limited perspectives, and I ended up getting a Tri-X self-supporting tower that lifted up, I think, about 70 feet. Very big thing. It had the crank up on the side, and it had a tilt-over feature to it, exactly described as this gentleman had written in the article, Cal White. And I did the very same thing, but I actually pretty much started out in the beginning of my career with that particular configuration, plus, of course, dipoles and verticals. I ended up buying a Telrex TB5EM 5-element tri-bander from the good people at the Telex Corporation down there in New Jersey. And that particular antenna is still up there. It was a real horse then, and it's a real horse now. So when I combine that TB5EM from Telrex on top of that Tri-X tower from California, from east to west, I think Tri-X is located in Visalia, California, and the other folks are near Atlantic City, I think. And it's still up there, and when I get a chance to get on the air and just punch in even just 125 watts barefoot, it gets great reports. It took a lick, too, frankly, several years ago from one of the multitude of hurricanes that hit the eastern seaboard from time to time. I had had it lowered to about 40 feet and inside of a circular configuration of tall trees, but the trees were taller than the tower. Had to have some guys come and repair one of the elements, but it's still up there. So it can be done, and the gentleman actually reflects my experiences just about exactly the same way. Oh, but there is one other thing. Now all the trees have grown bigger and bigger and fatter and fatter. I've actually had to get consent from my neighbors to keep trimming the edges of their trees so I could lower the tower. But I'm getting older, too, exactly describing, as this gentleman has done earlier in the article, that I would not be able to actually drop that antenna and put it on the T configuration, tip it down over, because there are so many lower branches that trees that have grown for 20, 25, 30 years. He didn't mention that factor, but in my case, you do have a consideration there as well. If you're somewhere near, let's say, a corner of your property, and there are neighbors on two sides that may not be that interested in helping you keep the area clean. Think about that, too. Now back to the magazine. You're probably getting tired of me rambling on. I very seldom make personal comments, folks. This is Bob, call N1BLF. My QTH is in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, right on Buzzards Bay near good old Cape Cod. And while I think about it, I don't often invite you to do so, but I will invite you to give me an email contact if you have any interest whatsoever in commenting about how I read the magazine or what I should try to add that I seldom add from this type of magazine. I would really appreciate that. I've been doing this now for quite a few years for the Courage Handy Hemp System. And as a matter of fact, there are quite a few of you in the northeastern part of the United States. And for that matter, if you have internet capabilities, you can listen to it 24/7. I also give this material, as well as QST Magazine, to the Massachusetts Reading Network. They're known as the Talking Information Center, TIC. Their website is www.ticnetwork.com. It's a 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week reading service for people that are print impaired, however they got to that state in their life. Very interesting, total kind of programming, all kinds of information. Go to their website at www.ticnetwork.com, and you could actually click on the prompt where it says "Listen Now," and you could actually use that as background information station all day long if you're not very mobile. TIC is as dedicated to the service of print-impaired individuals as other major organizations are on the Internet if you were to search them out. They happen to be my favorite because I've been reading for the Massachusetts Reading Network for about 30 years now, all kinds of material, and they deserve a plug once in a while because they're there and they do the job. It's a state-of-the-art facility in Marshfield, Massachusetts that goes out over the Internet and streaming audio. It has all kinds of archive material on there. They read regular kind of books, novels, general magazines for people, things that you just don't get on your local talk stations. And if you're like me, and if you're not, that's okay too, we're all individuals, I can't handle the talk stations very long because you generally end up getting somebody just blasting away on the same ragged theme and the same people call up virtually every time the program is on the air. If they get on, they feel like a hero. If they don't, they're probably sulking alongside their radio. Now, having had an extended commentary there, I'll go back to a couple of letters to the editor. On World Radio, I don't usually look too hard at the letters to the editor, but this is the second month that there have been letters come in to Nancy Cott. And it's because of an article that appeared in World Radio a couple of months ago, I believe. I believe I read that one. I'm not going to go back and listen to myself to see if I did, because I pick and choose these magazines, both QSD and World Radio, and I hit them cold. It was about antenna posts in the back of most radios, ANT1 and ANT2. If you happen to hear that, you'll probably start laughing with me. I'll just read this and then we'll move on. Letter to the editor now. Great sense of humor. Hi, Nancy. Without a doubt, the April piece written by John Rohde about ants is one of the best I've read for ham satire. What a genius, looking at the back of a tuner or some of today's rigs and seeing the ant one and ant two. Sure had stimulating effect on K3QF. Super writing and the new CW by Ray Dio deserves many more additions. Great stuff. Thanks for an old publishing salesman and non-QCWA of 55 years. That was sent in by Jim Cipprell, S-I-P-P-R-E-L-L. Jim's call is K2HYQ. Here's another one on its subject. Didn't see the humor. Nancy. WZHC. I have taken World Radio for years and have had my ticket since 1962. The April 2008 issue is useless. I would hate for non-ham to read it. Hope things get better. That was Harold Ford venting. Harold's call is K5NB. Nice extra call. Harold, you had your shot. I gave it to you. Now, these two are for this issue, June 2008. I think there were three of them, more or less, in the May issue. Somewhat the same thing, taking sides on whether it was good or not so good to do that ant commentary. Hi, hi. Let's get back to talking on the radio. My most interesting QSO. The author here is Greg Combs, C-O-M-B-S, call K7ZX, Kilo 7 Zulu X-ray. In the spring of 1987, my wife, son, and I were invited to Norway as traveling evangelists. At that time, we were missionaries living in San Jose, Costa Rica, where I signed a TI2ZQ. In Norway, one of our trips took us to the small island of Karmøy, on the western side of the country. We were guests in the home of one of the local fellows who lived about halfway out on the jetty that separated the small harbor at Akraham from the North Sea. To get into town, we had to pass right by a house which sported an aluminum mast with a Cushcraft tri-bander and 2-meter and 70-centimeter antennas, but I never really had the time to stop and meet the local ham. I could never have imagined what would take place a few weeks later. We had been in Oslo prior to this junket, and I had visited Norsk Telecom, where I dealt directly with Reda Stromso in obtaining a Norwegian reciprocal license. While in Akraham, I still did not have my license, so I could not get on 2 meters yet and did not have a chance to talk to any of the locals, including the guy down the road. A few weeks later, we flew back to Costa Rica, where I had a Swan 270 and a two-element quad. However, it was not until about 2 a.m. on June 15, when I could not sleep, that I turned on the rig, only to find that it was apparently not attached to the antenna. I could not hear a thing on 20 meters. After fiddling with connections for a few minutes, the radio suddenly sprang to life. Right on the frequency of a ham who was explaining to a W-2 station where he lived. He commented that if the guy had a map of Norway, he should look on the west side of the country to find the island of Karmøy. My ears immediately pricked up, and I thought, wow, I was just there. The Norwegian further explained that he was in the little town of Akraham, but this time I nearly had to hold on to the operating table to keep from falling off my chair. Then, when he went on to tell the W-2 that his antenna farm consisted of an aluminum mast with a three-element Kutchcraft tri-bander and an antenna for VHF and UHF, I knew for sure that it was the guy down the street from where we had visited. I had obtained a copy of the Norwegian Amateur Radio Handbook, which had a call book in the back. I quickly looked up LA4CM and found that it was Thorleif Forland in the town of Akraham. I could hardly wait until he signed off with the W-2. The moment finally arrived, and I called him by both call and name. He came right back to me, and we exchanged the usual signal reports before I told him that I had just been a guest a few weeks before at a certain man's house. I knew that he would know the guy. Thor was very surprised and pleased, but lamented the fact that I had not stopped by for coffee and to operate his rig. Now for the epilogue. After more than 20 years, I sent Thor an email, and he replied right away, again exhorting me ex facto that I should have stopped for coffee and the chat. He has given his HF equipment to a grandson and moved to an apartment with his XYL, Borglild. However, he says that the local club station, which has good equipment and antennas for all HF bands, is only 900 meters from his home, so he can still work DX to his heart's content. Thanks for that submission by Greg Combs, called K7ZX. Let's take a peek at 1010 International. Headline, 1010 News, editor retires. The author submitting here is Gerald F. Gross, called WA6POZ, Whiskey Alpha 6, Papa Oscar Zulu. Steve Rasmussen, N0WY, number 68684, 1010 Director, QSO Party Manager, and 1010 News Editor, has decided to retire as 1010 Editor and as the QSO Party Manager. Steve has suffered from a low-grade form of leukemia for the past 10 years. It was not treatable, but watching his diet and general health has allowed him to live a fairly normal life. On 04 January 2008, Steve was admitted to the hospital after not being able to eat or sleep for the previous few days. I visited with him a few days later, and Steve indicated that the doctors had stated that he had an ulcer, and after a few days' treatment, he went home. Steve's homestay lasted a day. The pain became unbearable, and he went back into the hospital. Later that week, he learned that the cancer he has had for so long had mutated and become much more aggressive. During the rest of January, February, and March, Steve has been undergoing chemo treatments. They were scheduled to continue for several months. During our many visits, when Steve was able to communicate, we talked about many of the tasks he has undertaken, both for 1010 International Net and the many local clubs of which he is a member. Steve wants to remain active in 1010 as director, but feels it is best for 1010 and himself to give up being the 1010 news editor and QSO party manager. Steve and I have become close friends. I first met Steve back in 1995 when I visited the Plattsmouth Amateur Radio Club to give a presentation on the Nebraska QSO party and 1010 International Net. Steve was the editor of the Plattsmouth Communicator. Steve became a member of the 1010 in 1997, and when Linda Barnes, KQ4V, number 43299, decided to retire as 1010 news editor at the end of 1998, I asked if Steve was interested, and President Tom Henderson, K4CIH, number 33233, made the appointment. The rest is history. As Steve went on to become 1010 director, QSO party manager, and an individual who never said no to any tasks. In reviewing the 1010 News over the past 30-plus years, we have progressed from mimeograph, cut-and-paste, various word processors, Microsoft Publisher, to Quark Express, a full-featured publishing tool. Added also was the availability to electronically distribute the 1010 News in the PDF format. While the 1010 News had a color banner prior to Steve's 10-year endeavors, he added color to 8 pages. At this time, 31 March 2008, we have not selected a new editor or party manager. Hopefully, by the time this edition of World Radio goes to print, we will have. Now, folks, the article continues on with various other information, but relative to commentary about 1010, the easiest way to obtain information about 10-10, those are numerals, is to visit the website at www.ten-ten.org. You don't use the numerals there. Everything you want to know about the organization is on the web, including a downloadable membership application form. From the following website, www.lingerinc.com, that's www.lingerinc.com, you can make inquiries into the 1010 database, download a recent copy of the 1010 news, and so forth and so on. All of this information about 1010 International is on page 30 and 31 of the June 2008 World Radio Magazine. If you choose to find it and or have someone read it to you in its entirety, you'll enjoy it very much. Well, as they say, whoever they is, it's the good old summertime contest corner. Hot fun in the summertime. The author, Mark Stephen Williams, call K9GX, Kilo 9, Golf X-Ray. When I was first licensed as a KA4SKB back in the early 1980s, my primary interests in amateur radio were staying in touch with friends in W6 and W0 land and rag-chewing. I relocated from California to Kentucky during the summer of 1979 and took a new job in Louisville. I'm in the broadcasting business, and several of my broadcast brethren out west were licensed hams since their early teen years. Bitten by the radio bug at the tender age of 10, my early love affair with detecting signals from the ether began with DXing the medium wave AM broadcast band during winter months in the late 1950s and the early 60s. Like most amateurs, I got into propagation, antenna, and chasing paper, and didn't get contesting. Frankly, when reading contest scores in QSD and CQ magazine, I thought they were rather silly. Scores in the hundreds of thousands or millions seemed grossly inflated. A good old pitcher's duel in baseball with a final score of 1-0. Now, that's my idea of a real contest. My attitude toward contesting changed with my first field day. That FD experience with the local club was rather inauspicious. As a new club member, I wasn't invited to operate for a reason which escapes me now, but I watched and listened. After observing the club's field day operators for an hour or so, I headed home and fired up my trusty TS-820. A couple of hours and 50 or so QSOs later, I had a new understanding and appreciation for amateur radio sport. A fledgling contester was born that weekend, although I wasn't aware of it at the time. I'll get back to field day in a moment. Every June and July, three of my perennial favorite operating events reprise. The ARRL June VHF contest, field day, and in July, the IARU, that's the International Amateur Radio Union, HF World Championships. Each of these operating events presents a unique opportunity for the first-time contester to get a taste of competitive radio sport. First up is the June VHF Very High Frequency Contest. The ARRL VHF contest takes place on the second full weekend of the month. This year, the dates are 14 through 16 June. This contest begins at 1800 Universal Time Constant, UTC. Zulu time, Saturday, and ends 0300 UTC, Monday. The object? To work as many amateur stations in as many different 2 degrees by 1 degree grid squares as possible using authorized frequencies above 50 megahertz. This is a great first contest for technician class licensees. Techs have band privileges on virtually every amateur band above 6 meters. Antennas for VHF and UHF are relatively small, easy to build, and don't require a lot of real estate. 6 meters is called the magic band, for good reason. Propagation on 6 often presents interesting openings to grid squares on the other side of the country and rare DX half a world away. The most interesting thing about 6 meters is the way the band opens when sporadic E conditions are present. The springtime sporadic E season, as called, generally runs from late May until mid-July. I won't delve into propagation here. Check out Carl, K9LA's column, for timely information on how and why your signals bounce around the ionosphere. One of the most exciting 6-meter QSOs in the K9GX logbook is a contact I had back in July 2003 with Frank Hobelman, amateur call 5-Tango-6-Mike, 5T-6M, in Mauritania, Africa. The antenna used for that QSO is a 3-element 6-meter Yagi, which is mounted at about 10 meters on a push-up mast. You don't need huge antennas to do an effective job on the VHF bands, but that's not to say I don't enjoy the benefits of the 7-element 6-meter Yagi, which was installed in 2004 atop my 30-meter-tall tower. You will, however, need an alt-mode radio for your frequency bands of choice. CW, that's Morse code, and single sideband SSB are the preferable contesting and weak signal VHF state UHF modes, not FM. On 6 meters, listen for CW from 50.0 to 50.1 megahertz and single sideband between 50.2 through 50.4 megahertz. The CW frequencies on 2 meters are 144.06 through 144.10, and you'll find single sideband signals between 144.20 and 144.30. Technically, Field Day isn't a contest. The league's FD rules define the event this way: to work as many stations as possible, and in doing so to learn to operate in abnormal situations in less than optimal conditions. A premium is placed on developing skills to meet the challenges of emergency preparedness, as well as to acquaint the general public with the capabilities of amateur radio. Field Day is always the fourth full weekend of June. Field Day 2008 is 28 through 29 June. This year's Field Day theme is Ride the Waves, as in radio waves. If you're up for the challenge of operating QRP, that's very low power, on crowded HF bands under summertime conditions, try operating CW, slant natural power, on the Field Day. It's an order of magnitude more difficult than running 100 watts on generator power, but I guarantee you'll sharpen your operating skills if you try it. Whatever band or mode you choose, I suggest a horizontal loop antenna. You want a relatively high takeoff angle for your signal, since Field Day is primarily a domestic event. While the Field Day scoring format doesn't allow for multipliers based on geography, for instance, states, countries, or grid squares, the QSO exchange, QSO is the conversation between two hams in different parts of the world, the QSO exchange does include the ARRL slant RAC sections. You might consider challenging yourself to work at least 50 or 60 sections, or even all 80 sections during the weekend. And if you're going for your WAS, that's Worked All States Award, Field Day is a great weekend to up your totals. Recently, the ARRL added the GOTA station to the FD format. GOTA is an acronym for Get on the Air, and the idea is to encourage participation by newly licensed and generally inactive licensed amateurs. The league has added a station locator to its website this year, so if you're currently inactive without a radio or antenna system and don't belong to a local club, and of course if you have internet capabilities, you can point your browser to the ARRL website. It's www.arrl.org/contests/announcements/FD/. To hook up with the Field Day group in your area and ride the waves. The last of my summer favorites is the IARU High Frequency World Championship, HF World Championship. The object here, to contact as many other amateurs, especially IARU member society headquarters stations around the world as possible using the 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meter bands. Date and contest period are as follows. The second full weekend of July, beginning 1200 UTC Saturday and ending 1200 UTC Sunday. That's 12-13 July 2008. I really enjoy the IARU because it's a 24-hour event. Superhuman endurance isn't required. And there is usually plenty of participation from a lot of DXCC entities. Now, for you non-hams, this is a great article. The only trouble is a lot of the letters probably confuse people that don't know the lingo of amateur or ham radio. I only have to apologize with a chuckle because that's what the fun is all about. You have to get to learn this stuff. This DXCC entity thing at the very end there is actually the count of foreign countries outside of the continental United States that can be counted as a foreign contact. Ironically enough, that could include Hawaii, even though it's an American state, and also Alaska, that's also an American state, at least the last time I checked. But because they're out of the contiguous United States, they are called DX. And you can get different awards for working 100, 1,000, whatever. And that's a cherished program for many amateurs who have been in the hobby for a long time. They just love to get their wallpaper. That's the certificates they can send a self-addressed stamped envelope to somebody in some remote part of the world, cross the fingers, put a few green stamps in there. That's called money. And hope for the best that the paper will come back. Or at least a little 5x3 card called a QSO card confirmation, QSL card, that they can add to their collection as well for an award. The author here, Mark Stephen Williams, call K9GX, goes on to talk about the contest logbook information, but we'll leave that for another day. This contest corner piece is on page 40 and 41 of the June 2008 World Radio Magazine. Well, folks, I look outside and it tells me the sun is shining, the snow is gone, and it's already 65 degrees, and it's only 6:47 a.m. in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, on a Saturday for Memorial Day. So summer is just around the corner. Now, if you can cough up the $4 a gallon for the gas, you got it made. Starting with Hamfest in Idaho, Katunai Amateur Radio Society Hemfest will be held 14 June 2008 at the American Legion Hall, Post Falls, Idaho. State of Illinois, Egyptian Radio Club. No, that's not a DX entity. Egyptian Fest will be held 08 June at the Southwestern Illinois College, located at the intersection of Maryville Road and Highway 203 on the north side of Granite City, Illinois. The 6-Meter Club of Chicago Incorporated Hamfest will be held on 8 June 08 at the DuPage County Fairgrounds in Wheaton, Illinois. In Midland, Michigan, the Amateur Radio Club Hamfest will be on the 14th at the Midland County Fairgrounds, Midland, Michigan. Northern Michigan Amateur Radio Emergency Services Tailgate Swap, the 28th of June. That one is being hosted by Davis Tree Farm and Nature Conservancy at 8378 Van Tile Road, Elmira, Michigan. State of New York, Hall of Science Amateur Radio Club will hold their Hamfest on the 8th of June at the New York Hall of Science parking lot, Flushing Meadows, Corona Park, Queens, New York. In Tennessee, Radio Amateur Club of Knoxville Hamfest and Electronics Exposition and ARRL Delta Division Convention will be held 14 June 2008 at the Kerbala Temple, 315 Mimosa Street, Knoxville, Tennessee. Great State of Texas, Deep East Texas Amateur Radio Club Hamfest is the 21st of June in Lufkin, Texas. Virginia, Franklin Amateur Radio Club, Bronco Club, Pig Pickin' Tailgating Picnic. Will be held 08 June in Franklin, Virginia. And one more in Great Old Virginia, Old Virginia Hams Amateur Radio Club Hamfest on the 8th of June, also at the Prince William County Fairgrounds in Manassas, Virginia. You can catch up on old American Revolutionary history all at the same time. So put that gas in a tank and take a ride into the magnificent countryside near Manassas, Virginia. We have a couple of special events. The 60th anniversary, Shenandoah Valley Amateur Radio Club. Oh, that happens to be Virginia also, doesn't it? That's coincidence, believe me. Operating a special event station, call is going to be W4RKC, Whiskey 4, Romeo Kilo Charlie, on 7 through 8 June 2008, from 0 Zulu to 2359 Zulu in Winchester, Virginia. Here's another special event, Museum Ships Afloat Weekend. USS Cobia, that's C-O-B-I-A, Amateur Radio Club will operate Special Event Station NB9QV, November Bravo 9, Quebec Victor, from the World War II submarine USS Cobia, which is AGSS-245, on the 7th of June, 1400 Zulu on the 8th of June through 2100 Zulu, in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, to celebrate Museum Ships Afloat Weekend. The 50th anniversary, National Trail Amateur Radio Club, operating Special Event Station K9, UXZ, Kilo 9, Uniform X-Ray Zulu, 14 June, 0900 to 1800 Central Daylight Time in Effingham, Illinois, to celebrate its 50th anniversary. National Railway Historical Society 2008 Convention. Local hams, that's a non-ham group, will operate Special Event Station K5T, Kilo 5 Tango, 16 through 22, so that's about a six-day spread, June 2008, Fort Worth, Dallas, Texas, to celebrate the National Railway Historical Society 2008 Convention. And lastly, we have an obituary, L.B. Sibick, C-E-B-I-K, call, W4RNL, Whiskey 4, Romeo, November, Lima. L.B. Sibick, 68, ARRL technical advisor and antenna authority, passed away in mid-April. An ARRL life member, Sibick was known to many hams for the numerous articles he wrote on antennas and antenna modeling. He had articles published in most of the U.S. ham journals, and they're all listed here. Larry Wolfgang, WR1B, QEX editor, called Sibick probably the most widely published and often read author of amateur radio antenna articles ever to write on the subject. Sibick lived in Knoxville, Texas, and wrote more than a dozen books on antennas for both the beginners and the advanced student. Among his books are a basic tutorial in the use of NEC antenna modeling software and compilations of his many shorter pieces. A teacher for more than 30 years, Sibick was retired, but served as professor emeritus of philosophy at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Well, folks, this pretty much gets me up to an hour's worth of recording on the Courage Handyham System reading of World Radio Magazine for June 2008. World Radio is published by Armand Noble. His call is N6WR. Their offices are at 2120 28th Street, Sacramento, California, 95818. And you can call them at area 916-457-3655. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It's for the use of eligible Handyham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handyhams can be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. My name is Bob Zeida. I spell it Z-E-I-D-A. My call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. My email, I'll offer to you again, is N1BLF@comcast.net. Drop me a line. Tell me how good or bad it sounds. Have a great summer. Bye-bye.